From building a business we're talking about to creating best-in-class client experiences, we're here to explore what it takes to make sure you're top of mind and get the referral every time. Join me as I interview some of the most innovative and inspiring business owners in the online space and discover how you can create more opportunities to ensure your clients are thrilled with your work and make you the obvious choice to send their friends to. It's time to stop going it alone and start transforming your star power into staying power. I'm Dusty Arab, and you're listening to Referral Worthy. Let's get started. All right. Welcome back to Referral Worthy. Samantha Pollack of Indie Copy Studio here. She is an editor, a copywriter, and a writing instructor with her special program called The Craft. Thank you so much, Sam, for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So to kick things off, I would love to hear about the current iteration of your biz.
Yeah. So right now, the current iteration of my biz is kind of cobbled together from editing work that I do for everyone from academics working on a dissertation, so Chicago Manual of Style, intense proofreading stuff, to authors that are working on a manuscript, and then also business owners who are writing sales pages, emails, blog posts, things like that. And then I'm doing editing work for them as well, which is kind of like a hybrid copywriting service that I recently invented.
That's amazing. I know so few people who have that kind of editing range, first of all, but also to be really in it with each of those stages, not to just be like, I used to do, you know, academic editing, and to be doing all of those at the same time is such a massive lift. Like, how's your brain?
Well, it depends on the day. I actually think, you know, I did used to do more exclusively done for you kind of boutique high-end copywriting. In the heyday of online business service providership, I made a ton of money doing that, and that's all I was doing. And then the editing work was more like a side hustle that I didn't really talk about that much. It was just something that I did and liked doing. I actually find now that my brain is happier having a variety of things to do. And I also just love editing. I always have. And I'm like, I'm really good at it. And it helps me. It helps me have more creative capacity, because editing work is just such a different thing that you're doing than when you're writing from scratch. And I feel like this is kind of where like the hybrid thing that I invented comes in. It's basically done with you copywriting. But if you, as the business owner, the person who's writing the first draft, can take the lift off of yourself from making it like the best sales page you've ever written or like the best version of the thing, and you can just get something down and you give it to me and then I can do that part, that's easier for both of us. So my brain's okay.
Oh, I love that. So like, you give me the shitty first draft.
Yeah.
I will come back and make it what you like, what you're hoping for.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense to me. Well, I feel like, I mean, editors have obviously always been important for a lot of reasons. There's no faster way for me to give like an ebook, you know, a 4 instead of a 5 than being like, bitch, if you just would have had somebody go through there and fix the things, like it would have been like a much better book. It's so distracting for me. But I feel like especially in the age of AI, having a good editor is, you know, even if you are using AI to help you with parts of it, like that's not a problem. But like if I can spot that it's AI, like we're already starting to see discourse around how I automatically trust you less.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Oh, my gosh. I have a lot to say about that. What I will say is I think a lot of people don't understand what editors do. And so there's proofreading, and that's just like fixing typos and like making sure that's like the nerd stuff. Like, look, I just happen to have on my desk this massive thing of Manual of Style, which I do actually use the physical copy, but I also use the online version because it's up to date like forever.
Right.
But neither one is easier to search, to be honest. I'd rather just look through a book. So I think there's levels, right, of editing. So when you look at a piece, and I think understanding it through a book lens helps. So if you're an author and you're writing a fiction, a fantasy book, you would go to someone for a developmental edit. And that would be like, hey, this story is not hanging together, or I feel like this character is not working the way I wanted him to, or maybe there's a plot hole. There's stuff that you will know about that's not working and stuff that you don't know about. And that's what a developmental, or sometimes they call it structural editing, will look at and be like, the way you're putting these sentences and words together needs to be rearranged, or there's something missing. And my job is to kind of figure out what it is and what we might be able to do to fix it. So it's really conceptual. And then later on in the process, you get to the more granular, like, you don't need a colon before this, you need a comma, this should be a semicolon, or these should be in quotes, or there's, you know, that little picky stuff.
Right.
And what I do for writers in the business world, I'm not so picky about the grammar, because like, it doesn't really matter. It only matters so you don't look like an idiot. But it doesn't
right.
matter if it's like correct according to this giant book here. It just matters if it
right.
looks mostly right.
I know. I write in so many fragments anymore because I know that's like how I speak. So like I want my written voice to emulate the way that I sound realistically as much as possible. So like I had to get over that. Like, God, that was probably 10 years ago when I was still like a baby mm-hmm. writer, like online at least, and like get used to writing those fragments, because they might not be correct per se, but they sound like me and they sound fine, like as long as the cadence is right.
Yeah, your writing really does sound like your voice. You're really good at that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, and that's so much more important than like grammar.
Oh,
so
100%.
Everyone listening, grammar doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, it does matter.
I'm going to make that war image for this episode, and it's going to be the one that takes off because everyone's no. And we're going to make everybody argue about it. It'll be great. It'll get everybody to listen to this.
All right. Great. I'm down. I do like grammar. I have to say that.
Yeah, I get it. I understand.
I like it. It's my friend.
But I think it is really important to delineate between like the different types of editing mm-hmm. because like that also changes like what you're paying. Like,
yeah,
it's one thing to have somebody proofread and things like that. But like I was recently reading a fantasy book, actually. And I remember there was this one section. And it was probably like 3/4 of the way into the book. So like I'm invested. I'm like, things are overwhelmingly like it's been really good. The banter is really great. But I remember distinctly this one paragraph where something was weird in the rhythm of the sentences there. And I remember that I just like I tripped over it and I went back and I reread it like 4 times. And I finally was like, oh, I think this is what they were trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like it totally got missed. And it could be just a me thing. But I got to think that if I tripped like that over that particular section, it just got missed. Because the rest of it had been right. Yeah, they probably are right. Because the rhythm just wasn't quite the same. And that I feel like is something that I pay more attention to, like the deeper I get into writing as I get older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the more you write, the better writer you become. And then the more you read, too, the more you pick up on things. And also, if you read a lot in the same genre, then you'll notice, like, a lot of fantasy authors have, like, the same kind of quirks that you'll notice from one book to another. And that's another thing, actually, that editors look for, or that I am, like, especially looking for. Like, people have things, like, a lot of people have, like, a call and response thing, like a question and then answer. And then they like do that all the time. Or they have, I see a lot of copywriting examples like this because there's just like particular like tropes in copywriting. And none of them are bad or wrong. It's just like when you do one thing too much, it becomes noticeable. And then it becomes distracting from the point that you're trying to make when it's just like a convention. Like you can just say the exact same thing and just format it differently. And it's not really a hard fix.
Right.
But I think too that in business owners, service providers, people who are writing their own copy for their business, it's like they don't know that editing is a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering, I wish I knew why. And I know a lot of former copywriters who've tried to just be editors instead, and they don't do it. They end up saying things, well, I tried to just do editing, but then the first draft that I got was such a hot mess that I ended up having to rewrite the whole thing. And it's like too hard to keep the scope in check. And I don't feel like I ever have that problem. I feel like if I understand what you're trying to say, then I can just make it what it needs to be.
Right.
And I think that comes from having so much experience as a copywriter, but then also being a good editor who understands the structure and scaffolding that lives behind something hanging together and what makes something a good experience for the reader. It's my favorite thing to do, to be honest. I could do it all the time and be completely happy.
But really, I feel like I get a lot of cool writing professor vibes from you. which I feel intentional or not, vibe-wise at least, that really does kind of fit where your business has gone, though, because you went from doing strictly all the big email funnels and all of that stuff and being one of the best in the business, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the amount of money that you've made for other people, frankly, is unfair. It's ridiculous. But also this transition into wanting to focus more on the craft. What is it that we're trying to do here besides just sell people? Why does it work the way that it does? I mean, really, I know so few people who have been willing to step into that space even, because it feels so, in our heads, it feels so much less reliable than writing marketing copy, right? Because that's what we've gotten paid, you know, so much to do over the years.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm not doing things that differently in my writing than I was when I was making all that money for those people. I'm still the same kind of writer, and I still have more or less the same approach to the craft of it. I think the difference is that, well, there's a couple differences. One is the landscape has changed. The economy has changed. The service provider economy has changed. The ability and desire for people to pay the amount of money to a copywriter that I used to get paid is just not really a thing anymore. Or the people and businesses who are still doing that are operating at this level of they're a 7-8-figure business, or they are working with agencies. I see that a lot more, where people are more willing to hire out an agency that does all the things instead of just one service provider that does one thing. So part of it is just that the way people relate to creative services has changed and is continuing to change. And what that means is more and more kind of smaller scale businesses are just taking on things themselves. And it it doesn't always make sense to hire a copywriter to do it start to finish when you can just really, you don't really need that. I mean, I hate to say that, but a lot of people don't really need that. And it also just isn't cost effective. Say you're launching an online course and you have a goal of 25, 30K from that launch. If you spend five of that on a copywriter, that still feels like a lot. Yeah. And that would be not even what it would cost to do a full-on launch, start to finish, all the emails, all the sales pages, everything from scratch as an outside service provider. But if you, the service provider, or you, whoever, the person who has the course, can do some of the lifting yourself, and with AI, you can now, bringing someone in like me, you still get the same result of potentially meeting the sale goal that you have, but you have spent a lot less money and just consolidated resource. Am I making sense? There's a lot of factors happening here.
Oh, no. I mean, well, this is perfect, because my next question for you was going to be what are the changes in the industry that you're seeing right now? And I think the consolidation of creative service, the way people are engaging with creative service providers is absolutely true, unquestionably so, because of AI. I know so many different people who have I guess it's on two sides of things. I know some people who have totally pulled out of copywriting or have gone in-house because they saw the writing on the wall as marketers. Most people who operate, I know in a space that I do, I came up as a copywriter, but then I moved into more of the marketing strategy and things like that, and being, stepping in as a generalist who can hire a team and things. And while I'm still doing okay, pretty much everybody else I know who does what I do is in-house now, because they saw the writing on the wall. Before it became a problem, they went and got
a job.
And I don't blame them.
Yeah. And I think, okay, so that's one of the changes I've seen is as the service provider, as someone who I think you and me both know so many copywriters who used to be copywriters and then now they're creative director, or now they're a fractional CMO, or people have just shifted away from it. And for a while there was this vibe of graduating, I used to do that, but now I do this. But I really think it's because being a full-time copywriter burns you out.
From building a business we're talking about to creating best-in-class client experiences, we're here to explore what it takes to make sure you're top of mind and get the referral every time. Join me as I interview some of the most innovative and inspiring business owners in the online space and discover how you can create more opportunities to ensure your clients are thrilled with your work and make you the obvious choice to send their friends to. It's time to stop going it alone and start transforming your star power into staying power. I'm Dusty Arab, and you're listening to Referral Worthy. Let's get started.
All right. Welcome back to Referral Worthy. Samantha Pollack of Indie Copy Studio here. She is an editor, a copywriter, and a writing instructor with her special program called The Craft. Thank you so much, Sam, for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So to kick things off, I would love to hear about the current iteration of your biz.
Yeah. So right now, the current iteration of my biz is kind of cobbled together from editing work that I do for everyone from academics working on a dissertation, so Chicago Manual of Style, intense proofreading stuff, to authors that are working on a manuscript, and then also business owners who are writing sales pages, emails, blog posts, things like that. And then I'm doing editing work for them as well, which is kind of like a hybrid copywriting service that I recently invented.
That's amazing. I know so few people who have that kind of editing range, first of all, but also to be really in it with each of those stages, not to just be like, I used to do, you know, academic editing, and to be doing all of those at the same time is such a massive lift. Like, how's your brain?
Well, it depends on the day. I actually think, you know, I did used to do more exclusively done for you kind of boutique high-end copywriting. In the heyday of online business service providership, I made a ton of money doing that, and that's all I was doing. And then the editing work was more like a side hustle that I didn't really talk about that much. It was just something that I did and liked doing. I actually find now that my brain is happier having a variety of things to do. And I also just love editing. I always have. And I'm like, I'm really good at it. And it helps me have more creative capacity, because editing work is just such a different thing that you're doing than when you're writing from scratch. And I feel like this is kind of where like the hybrid thing that I invented comes in. It's basically done with you copywriting. But if you, as the business owner, the person who's writing the first draft, can take the lift off of yourself from making it like the best sales page you've ever written or like the best version of the thing, and you can just get something down and you give it to me and then I can do that part, that's easier for both of us. So my brain's okay.
Oh, I love that. So like, you give me the shitty first draft.
Yeah.
I will come back and make it what you like, what you're hoping for.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense to me. Well, I feel like, I mean, editors have obviously always been important for a lot of reasons. There's no faster way for me to give like an ebook, you know, a 4 instead of a 5 than being like, bitch, if you just would have had somebody go through there and fix the things, like it would have been like a much better book. It's so distracting for me. But I feel like especially in the age of AI, having a good editor is, you know, even if you are using AI to help you with parts of it, like that's not a problem. But like if I can spot that it's AI, like we're already starting to see discourse around how I automatically trust you less.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Oh, my gosh. I have a lot to say about that. What I will say is I think a lot of people don't understand what editors do. And so there's proofreading, and that's just like fixing typos and like making sure that's like the nerd stuff. Like, look, I just happen to have on my desk this massive thing of Manual of Style, which I do actually use the physical copy, but I also use the online version because it's up to date like forever.
Right. Right.
But neither one is easier to search, to be honest. I'd rather just look through a book. So I think there's levels, right, of editing. So when you look at a piece, and I think understanding it through a book lens helps. So if you're an author and you're writing a fiction, a fantasy book, you would go to someone for a developmental edit. And that would be like, hey, this story is not hanging together, or I feel like this character is not working the way I wanted him to, or maybe there's a plot hole. There's stuff that you will know about that's not working and stuff that you don't know about. And that's what a developmental, or sometimes they call it structural editing, will look at and be like, the way you're putting these sentences and words together needs to be rearranged, or there's something missing. And my job is to kind of figure out what it is and what we might be able to do to fix it. So it's really conceptual. And then later on in the process, you get to the more granular, like, you don't need a colon before this, you need a comma. This should be a semicolon, or these should be in quotes, or there's, you know, that little picky stuff.
Right.
And what I do for writers in the business world, I'm not so picky about the grammar, because like it doesn't really matter. It only matters so you don't look like an idiot. but it doesn't matter if it's like correct according to this giant book here. It just matters if it looks mostly right.
I know. I write in so many fragments anymore because I know that's like how I speak. So like I want my written voice to emulate the way that I sound realistically as much as possible. So like I had to get over that. Like, God, that was probably 10 years ago when I was still like a baby writer, like online at least, and like get used to writing those fragments because they might not be correct per se, but they sound like me and they sound fine, like as long as the cadence is right.
Yeah, your writing really does sound like your voice. You're really good at that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, and that's so much more important than like grammar.
Oh, 100%.
Everyone listening, grammar doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, it does matter.
I'm going to make that your image for this episode and it's going to be the one that takes off because everyone's no. And we're going to make everybody argue about it. It'll be great. It'll get everybody to listen to this.
All right. Great. I'm down. I do like grammar. I'm just going to, I have to say that.
Yeah, I get it. I understand.
I like it. It's my friend.
But I think it is really important to delineate between like the different types of editing because like that also changes like what you're paying. Like, you know, it's one thing to have somebody proofread and things like that. But like I was recently reading a fantasy book actually. And I remember there was this one section and it was probably like 3/4 of the way into the book. So like I'm invested. I'm like, things are overwhelmingly like it's been really good. The banter is really great. But I remember distinctly this one paragraph where something was weird in the rhythm of the sentences there. And I remember that I just like I tripped over it and I went back and I reread it like 4 times. And I finally was like, oh, I think this is what they were trying to do here. And it just like it totally got missed. And it could be just a me thing. But I got to think that if I tripped like that over that particular section, it just got missed. Because the rest of it had been right. Yeah, they probably are right. Because the rhythm just wasn't quite the same. And that I feel like is something that I pay more attention to, like the deeper I get into writing as I get older.
I mean, the more you write, the better writer you become. And then the more you read, too, the more you pick up on things. And also, if you read a lot in the same genre, then you'll notice, like, a lot of authors, a lot of fantasy authors have, like, the same kind of quirks that you'll notice from one book to another. And that's another thing, actually, that editors look for, or that I am, like, especially looking for. Like, people have things, like, a lot of people have, like, a call and response thing, like a question and then answer. And then they like do that all the time. Or they have, I see a lot of copywriting examples like this because there's just like particular like tropes in copywriting. And none of them are bad or wrong. It's just like when you do one thing too much, it becomes noticeable. And then it becomes distracting from the point that you're trying to make when it's just like a convention. Like you can just say the exact same thing and just format it differently. And it's not really a hard fix.
Right.
But I think too that in business owners, service providers, people who are writing their own copy for their business, it's like they don't know that editing is a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering, I wish I knew why. And I know a lot of former copywriters who've tried to just be editors instead, and they don't do it. They end up saying things, well, I tried to just do editing, but then the first draft that I got was such a hot mess that I ended up having to rewrite the whole thing. And it's like too hard to keep the scope in check. And I don't feel like I ever have that problem. I feel like if I understand what you're trying to say, then I can just make it what it needs to be.
Right.
And I think that comes from having so much experience as a copywriter, but then also being a good editor who understands the structure and scaffolding that lives behind something hanging together and what makes something a good experience for the reader. It's my favorite thing to do, to be honest. I could do it all the time and be completely happy.
But really, I feel like I get a lot of cool writing professor vibes from you. Which I feel, intentional or not, vibe-wise at least, that really does kind of fit where your business has gone, though, because you went from doing strictly all the big email funnels and all of that stuff and being one of the best in the business, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the amount of money that you've made for other people, frankly, is unfair. It's ridiculous. But also this transition into wanting to focus more on the craft. What is it that we're trying to do here besides just sell people? Why does it work the way that it does? I know so few people who have been willing to step into that space even because it feels so in our heads. It feels so much less reliable than writing marketing copy, right? Because that's what we've gotten paid, you know, so much to do over the years.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm not doing things that differently in my writing than I was when I was making all that money for those people. I'm still the same kind of writer, and I still have more or less the same approach to the craft of it. I think the difference is that, well, there's a couple differences. One is the landscape has changed. The economy has changed. The service provider economy has changed. The like ability and desire for people to pay the amount of money to a copywriter that I used to get paid is just not really a thing anymore. Or the people and businesses who are still doing that are operating at this level of like their 7-8-figure business, or they are working with agencies. I see that a lot more, where people are more willing to hire out like an agency that does all the things instead of just like one service provider that does one thing. So part of it is just that the way people relate to creative services has changed and is continuing to change. And what that means is like more and more kind of smaller scale businesses are just taking on things themselves. And it doesn't always make sense. To hire a copywriter to do it start to finish when you can just really, you don't really need that. I mean, I hate to say that, but a lot of people don't really need that. And it also just isn't cost effective. Like if you're, say you're launching an online course and you have like a goal of 25-30K from that launch, if you spend like 5 of that on a copywriter, that still feels like a lot. Yeah. And that would be not even what it would cost to do like a full-on launch, start to finish, all the emails, all the sales pages, everything from scratch as an outside service provider. But if you, the service provider, or you, whoever, the person who has the course, can do some of the lifting yourself, and with AI, like you can now, bringing someone in like me, you still get the same result of like potentially meeting the sales goal that you have, but you have spent a lot less money and just like consolidated resource. Am I making sense? There's a lot of factors happening here.
Oh, no. I mean, well, this is perfect because my next question for you was going to be like, what are the changes in the industry that you're seeing right now? And I think the consolidation of creative service, the way people are engaging with creative service providers is absolutely true, unquestionably so, because of AI. I know so many different people who have like, well, I guess it's on two sides of things. Like I know some people who have totally pulled out of copywriting or have gone in-house because they saw the writing on the wall as marketers. Like most people who operate, I know like in a space that I do, I came up as a copywriter, but then I moved into more of like the marketing strategy and things like that. And being, you know, stepping in as a generalist who can hire a team and things. And like, while I'm still doing okay, pretty much everybody else I know who does what I do is in-house now because they... You know, they saw the writing on the wall, like before it became a problem, they went and got
a job.
Like, yeah. And I don't blame them.
Yeah. And I think, okay, so that's one of the changes I've seen is like as the service provider, as someone who I think you and me both know so many copywriters who like used to be copywriters and then like now they're creative director. Now they're like a fractional CMO or like people have just like shifted away from it. And for a while, there was this vibe of like graduating, like I used to do that, but now I do this. But I really think it's because being a full-time copywriter burns you out, man. Like it's
100%.
It's really hard. And doing it at that level, like the way I was doing it before, I was writing like a novel's worth of copy every time my client launched. And it was draining and exhausting. And it felt a little exploitive because I can't speak to the amount of work that everyone else on a team is doing for something like that. But I just feel like I don't think anyone else is writing for 6 hours straight at their computer. But before that, also like strategizing all of the things that need to be written and who they should get sent to and when they should go out and who gets this email, but not this one and all of that. I need to do all of that before I can even write. That's a sidebar. But
no, it's not, though, because it's a lot of unpaid strategy work, which is why a lot of us felt like it was graduating, because really the only difference was your title and how much you were getting paid, because it was the same thing. And I've told lots of folks, like the reason that I knew that I had to get at least kind of out of copywriting was because that I found for my capacity, I had 25 good hours of creative writing time a week. No more.
That's a lot.
Like, and I would get so resentful spending my creative hours on other people's shit, especially if it was something that I didn't care that much about. Right. So I get it.
And too, I have completely rebranded in the last couple of years, and I have basically like burned out everything about my old business and restarted. And in that process, you know, I went through like a pretty long time where I was in like a client desert, and I'm not going to pretend like I'm fully out of the desert now. But all of this is to say, I've looked at job boards and like the job positions, this is another change I've noticed. It's always been a little intense, like what people expect out of a copywriter role and then what they're paying for it in-house. But it's gotten even crazier. Like the job responsibilities that you look at is like the job of three people to me, especially the amount of things that they expect one person to be able to write. Even if you did use AI for all of it, which is like, if you were going to bother to hire someone and pay them a salary and your expectation is that they're going to use AI to do their job, like, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, without there being parameters to it somehow, I feel like if I'm paying somebody to write, then it's their job to, well, I don't know. I have that thought fully formed yet. We'll get there later.
It's hairy. Like, it's definitely still a new enough space that I think that those parameters are still being sussed out. So either you get somebody who has a good instinct for it and knows, like, I know for me, like, I would never use AI to write out a full anything. But I do know that being able to use AI to help me with my transitions or give me ideas for transitions, oh my God, like the load that took off of me. Like, I feel like when I am in a good work block now, I never get stuck at that point where I always would get stuck before. And it's not because I'm not good at transitions. It's just that is always the point in my write where I'm used to going like, like, you know, and just like stopping, and it will totally take me right out of flow. But like, I think it's pretty obvious now when we see a brand or someone on LinkedIn who is verbatim just posting whatever the robot told them to post. And like, I mean, peak AI slop for sure. Like, you can tell, like, it's if so you spend depressing. Any amount of time online, you can tell.
Yeah. Yeah. I use AI. One of the things that I always get stuck on, and I think it's like procrastinating really, but I use a lot of pop culture references in my writing, and I think like I see stories in them, right? So I'm like, think of a good example that illustrates whatever point I'm trying to make in an email or something. I often will spend like a complete day just like trying to find the right example, or then like trying to find the scene in the show that is like telling me the thing that I wanted to know. I use AI for that, and it saves me a ton of time.
That's awesome. That's such a great use case.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like Claude is very circumspect. It's like, I'm not allowed to tell you. I'm not allowed to reproduce like copyrighted material. And I'm like, just tell me what episode it's in.
Right.
We fight a lot about that, me and Claude.
That's awesome. Claude. Okay. So we've talked some about how the landscape has changed in the online space. I would love to hear from you. Like, what are the like opportunities, the trends? What are you seeing in the space right now?
Yeah. So I think what is really exciting about this period of time, and I've sort of arrived at this opinion over time, but it's exciting for me because I have always, since 2015, been advocating for like human first practices and messaging and my approach to email. Like, one of the reasons all those emails I wrote in the before times did so well is because I was doing them how I thought it was right to do them, even if they weren't really like as much as I could get away with. Humanizing and empathizing in a bro marketing framework. But now I feel like it's my time to shine, baby, because increase in not just AI, but in all these communications that are happening on platforms where you're looking at a screen. You're not doing what you and me are doing right now. You're not looking at another person's face. You're not hearing their voice or their inflections. There's like just increased removal of human contact in all of our experiences. Like, not just in business, but like as a person moving through the world, like you don't chat with a person, you chat with a bot, and even chatting with a person was already enough removed, but now it's not even a person that's on the other end of the screen. It just feels very isolating. And even if you're not a person who is like bothered by that, like I am, it still is just the decrease in the amount of human interaction that any person is having in their day. The opportunity that exists for us as business owners is like the more human and real you can be, like that's only going to serve to your advantage. So that's why I'm like excited that I have a course where I teach people how to write, because like half of what I end up teaching in that course isn't even really like actual writing craft. It's just like, hey, you can just say what the fuck you want to say. Like, you can just talk how you talk, and you can just have the most important thing is to have a recognizable, like real voice and point of view and personality that feel like when I read your emails, I feel like I'm in conversation with a human being. It's a balm lately to the way everything else feels in business and just everyday going through life. So I think that the opportunity is there to, whenever there's expansion, there's also contraction, right? And I think that at business owners who have smaller, more agile businesses, we've always been in a position to kind of anticipate those changes like earlier than the bigger ones. And that's kind of how I've been feeling lately, is like I've sensing this from the people who respond to my emails and the other business owners that I'm in community with that I talk to. Like everyone is sort of craving contraction now, like coming closer together and forming community that like is meaningful and tight and like reliable. And I think that as someone who does marketing, you're in a position where you're already in conversation with people. And so it's a lower lift, honestly, to just be real. So that's my soapbox.
That's a pretty solid soapbox. I mean, I would say that that reflects a lot of what I'm seeing too, both mm-hmm. with the desire for smaller, tighter communities, but also that very human element. Like I know for me, like this was my very first year being like at a booth in a market. Mm. And so it ended up like, I'm so glad that I did it for so many reasons. But I mean, I'm here in my basement office right now, and I spend a lot of time here in my beautiful basement office. But like, you know what I'm not doing down here is talking with people face to face. And I will say that getting out into the community and having to be forward facing, and I didn't do it like every week, even just every other week. That's about all I could handle emotionally. But like having those regular interactions like that was so healthy for me in so many ways. It made me be nicer. It made me be more open. It made me be like, it forced me to work all of those social graces that since COVID, I work less. And yeah. I mean, I used to be a barista. Like I was a barista for 10 years before I was a copywriter. And so like everything I did was forward facing. Everything mm-hmm. I did was like very like that mattered so much. Mm-hmm. And it still does. Like, I mean, it still does. And people can feel the difference with that. Even I would say that my writing has been stronger in the last several months since mm-hmm. I've been getting more of that person to person. Just, I mean, across the board, I definitely am getting a lot more response. I'm getting a lot more like, oh my God, like that piece right there, that is exactly the feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's honestly, it's been a while. It's been a while since I've gotten that kind of response. And I fully credit it to being out in the community. Like, and mm-hmm. also not least of all, it ended up being a great way for me to get referrals for my marketing business too. Like, because I was out there with all the other business owners.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that speaks to so many things. Like going out and having shit happen to you is important if you are going to try to write. And lately, the thing I'm on is how to write and publish every single week like I do. And one of the things is like, you have to go experience things or think about things or be exposed to different things or just have new shit happen to you.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I was a bartender for 10 years before I was a copywriter, or I was also a personal trainer. So I was like one-on-one, baby, making people cry in the gym. But yeah, it does feel like I worry about the younger generation.
Yeah.
That makes me feel a little old to say stuff like that, but.
No, I mean, I'm in a really interesting position because my kids are such different ages. Mm-hmm. Oh, my oldest is firmly Gen Z. My middle is firmly Gen Alpha. And I don't know what the new one is, but no, like Emerson is going to be right on the edge of Gen Alpha and whatever the next one is. Mm-hmm. And even the differences there are fairly pronounced. Like there's a 3.5 year age gap between my two oldest kids, and the differences are huge. Like my oldest is definitely better at organizing, you know, people and getting everybody together and all of that. But admittedly, that was like a skill that they've like basically came equipped with. Like they're good at making a group happen. Mm-hmm. And
so are
my
you.
Middle kiddo. Yeah, that is definitely, definitely a skill set that I have now. It wasn't always. But with my middle kiddo, though, we've had to push him to, you know, put himself out there because of those COVID years. Like he got very mm-hmm. good at the online school and stuff. He's definitely the most similar to me personality wise, but he doesn't think about things like, hey, you know, that guy you like hanging out with at swords class, you know, you guys could exchange Discords so that you could like play games together online, or we could hang out like in person. He's never had a friend over to our house. And that just like blows my fucking mind. And then I keep encouraging him to. I was like, buddy, I buy the good snacks. I have a big old house for this. Like, bring your little weird buddies over and hang out and play video games. And it's just like, it doesn't even occur to him.
Yeah.
Like, the long tail of that is extreme. And I mean, he's being forced into it by a parent who's aware, but there are so many other folks who are like, that aren't. It's just very contracted, very tribal. So like, there's one thing to be said for tighter, more intimate communities, but once things get tribal, things get scary.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's like basically sums up our entire country right now. We did it.
Okay, let's transition there. Sam, what's something you've had to learn the hard way?
Oh, God. Let's see. I feel like the thing I had to learn the hard way was that I was right all along. And I think... I think this is just a function of experience and, you know, general living life and doing work and doing the same type of work for 10 years. When I first started copywriting, I was such a idealist. I was so starry-eyed. I was so happy to be getting paid money to write anything. I charged like $200 to write my first website for somebody, and it was so good. I still love what I wrote 10 years ago that I charged $200 for. But I think when I started getting into the business and taking all the courses and learning all the shitty pickup artist guys who turned into marketers and all of that stuff felt so gross to me right off the bat. But as I was new in the industry and I was, you know, being gifted all of these courses and trainings and summits and like books and things to learn, and like, this is how it was being done. Frank Kern and Jeff Walker and all those guys back in the day. It was just kind of, this is how it's being done. So I kind of accepted it and didn't really, I don't think I would have done it differently, because I think you have to get all of the experience to realize, oh, those instincts were actually right. Because I think it takes a lot of hubris. And I guess maybe men do this more, but to be like, I don't like this. I'm not going to do it this way. You know, what do I know? Like, I don't have the experience. I don't have the proof that I am right. I haven't tried my way. It just feels wrong to me. Like everything about the sort of, I don't know, what are we calling it? Are we still calling it bro marketing?
I don't think we have another word
just
for it
the
yet.
Way it was always being done, it always felt like the writing was bad to me. Like super aggressive, like salesy writing. It always felt like not fun to read. And like around that time, 2015, everyone was like into being edgy, but all that meant was they were just like swearing all the time and like being really shouty in their emails. I was just like, whoa, like one person did it well and now everyone's trying to do it that way, and it's not good. And so I think like when I look at the work that I'm doing now, like my values and my opinions about what makes good writing and what, you know, how you should talk to the people on your email list and how you should like present the value of the thing that you're offering on your website or your sales page, like none of it has really changed. I have a bigger toolbox in terms of how to execute it, and I have more experience and examples of like what works and what doesn't. But the thing that's motivating me like now is really kind of, I have better words for it too. Better ways to talk about it, but it's honestly taken me, it's crazy how long it's taken to be like, oh, like that's what I'm saying about like the time we're in right now, like AI. I'm like, oh, like now is even a better time to like for me to be right. Then like in 2016 when everyone was making piles and piles of money doing it this way, like that wasn't a great time for me to be right, because why would you change something that was so profitable just because it was wrong? Like, you know, it's capitalism, baby. But now it's like, yeah, man. So I would say, what's my final answer?
Good fucking answer. So good.
Yeah.
So good. Okay. So you and I have been in this for a hot minute. You actually have quite a few newer business owners who listen to this podcast. So for those folks who are up and coming in the space, do you have any words of wisdom for them?
I do. And you're not going to like them. Honestly, it's like so boring. We just have to keep going, right? Like, just have to keep going and be patient. And I think what has become clear to me too, especially because I rebranded, so it's kind of like I'm old but also new, and the way that I'm approaching my business now that I'm rebranding is really different from how I did it before. I put a lot of thought first into what I'm doing, who it's for, what the best thing is that I can offer to the people who I want to work with, who want to work with me, and kind of start there before I fuck around with branding and messing around on a web. Like now I'm kind of like, well, I really need to get my website together, but I have something to invite people to. I have something that I know is good and working. And I never really took the time to develop and refine my core offers before. Or I think a lot of people aren't really doing that. I have a lot of clients, you'd be surprised. I'm like, well, what are your offers? And they're like, I do coaching. Well, like, but what is it? Like, what's happening inside that coaching container and how does it work? So I think getting really clear on that stuff is more important, and actually getting people to work with you is more important. And then later you can figure out how to make it sexy, which is like a non-sexy answer, but it's true.
Seriously.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. What is referral worthy to you right now? Brands, people, books, what are you obsessed with right now?
Okay. And it can be anything?
Anything.
Okay. So it's nerdy, but I just read this summer the Broken Earth trilogy by N.K. Jemisin. It's a fantasy series. It is so freaking good. If you or any of your readers like fantasy books, and I know that you do, do you read her at all?
I'm not familiar, no.
N.K. Jemisin, all of her shit is very, very good. This series in particular is very allegorical. It's set in such a distant future Earth that our time that we're living through now is basically not relevant. It has nothing to do with this story. It's just on the same planet, but so many years in the future. It's just so good. I don't want to talk too much about it because it's a book podcast, but it's the way she plays with words and writing. If you're interested in craft of writing, she's a really interesting read just because she is so weird and she has a lot of fun with words. She doesn't really play by rules. This book is written in a second person, which is a little wild, the whole trilogy.
Wow. That's, I mean,
yeah.
Written, if I could name another book that's written in second person, like, you have to be doing that on purpose.
Yeah. Not off the top of your head, right? And she writes in present tense a lot too, which I always, a lot of authors do that, but I always really like that for some reason. I tend to do that too when I write, when I try to write fiction. But she just, the magic and the rules of the universe that she's put together are cool and interesting. And it's very sophisticated, I would say. Like, there's, a fantasy can range from so many different types, right? There's sort of YA fantasy, fourth wing, and smutty fantasy, and then there's romanticy, and then there's epic fantasy, you know, the classic, like a Wheel of Time or whatever. And this is just like its own, it's gritty and it's grounded. It's not super nerdy. I mean, I'm fine with that stuff too, but it's just very real. And I don't know, she's the best. So that's my recommendation. Summer reading.
Amazing. Summer reading challenge. Yeah, go check out Mary Williams' summer reading challenge if you haven't yet, guys, because that's a good excuse to go and absorb all the good new reads that you might not read otherwise. So go and get it
done. I've been really into the reading challenge too. I'm like, it all counts. It counts for my business.
Everything counts. We use it all.
Yeah.
Amazing. Sam, I enjoyed this conversation so much. Oh, so much for coming on. Yeah. Everybody, if you want to learn more about Sam and the craft, all of her links are going to be down below this episode. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, y'all.
You've been listening to Referral Worthy. If you're ready to get more business from the clients who already love you, you need my Client Experience Pack. It's a collection of templates designed to help you create a referral-worthy experience from first touch to final invoice. Find it at thereinvention.co/CEP.